Welcome to Series 2 of the Real Women Podcast. My name is Hannah Wilson and I am your host. In each episode, we will meet resilient, empowered, authentic leaders who identify as being women. Our conversations will share how they have developed their resilience, reflect on how they have been empowered on their journeys, explore how they have embraced their authentic selves, and discuss how they have evolved as leaders. In Series 1, I chatted to Julie, Audrey, Mandy, Issa, Skye, Dedeth, Rachel, Anna, Daniela, and Catherine. In Series 2, in each of our 10 episodes, we will meet more inspiring people from my Resilience Leaders Elements network, women in leadership who believe in the transformational impact of coaching. I hope you enjoy meeting them as much as I do knowing them. In this episode, I'll be chatting to Kate Smith. Kate is a compassionate leader and former primary head teacher who is dedicated to the development of an ethical curriculum, a curriculum that interweaves relevant moral and social themes, such as equity and diversity, global citizenship, and sustainable living in the education system. Kate currently leads the Heads Up for HTs network, a national network for head teachers, past, present, and future. The community provides well-being and emotional support to leaders to ensure they thrive and flourish, both in the education system and beyond. Her vision is to empower others to create a kinder, more sustainable world through ethical leadership and education. So Kate Smith, welcome to The Real Podcast.
Hello, Hannah.
It feels weird doing this, doesn't it? Because we're friends, we see each other regularly and now we're going formal. Tell the lovely listeners, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, thanks, Hannah. So let me introduce myself then as a values-led human being. I am a mother. I am a listener. I am a very peaceful soul. I am a joyful soul. I believe in love. I believe in authenticity. I believe in freedom. And I don't believe in introducing myself to my job title. So there you go.
Give them a little bit of a hint. What do you do?
Okay, so work that pays the bills for me is all to do really with my values and like mostly to do with connection. So I think the job title that suits me most would be holistic coach, life coach. And as you know, I'm also the leader for the Heads Up for Head Teachers Network.
Tell people who don't know what that is a little bit about that.
Okay, sure. So for those of you that don't know me at all, I am a former head teacher. And when I left my headship, I joined this incredible network, which is made up of head teachers across the UK and beyond, because now we have some friends from, I think we've got friends in Australia and Goa now. But so it's a national head teachers network, but it's slightly different. It's a support network that really focuses on intentional well-being, human connection, and like all the kind of challenges that head teachers face but don't get opportunities to talk about because often nobody gets it, and there's such, as you know, a high accountability system. So it's just really a really safe space for head teachers to be. Very cool place.
Brilliant. So tell the listeners, how do we know each other? How do we cross paths?
Okay, I had to really think back about this because I'm rubbish with timelines. But so you must correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm thinking that it was at the Women Ed. It was, yes, it was at the Women Ed conference. Go for it. Was it 2016?
Oh, what year was it? I think it was 2016. Yeah, it was. I was still London based. So it was our second year.
You were London based. It was. And so for me, it was my first Women Ed conference. And I remember it because I took with me, I was a senior leader in a school that I ended up working in for 9 years. And I took my head teacher to the conference and she did a workshop, which was awesome. But I have to remember this conference because it was the first time that I'd done mindfulness. So I don't know whether you remember this, but we were in the lecture theatre, you know, got hundreds of women in there. And these awesome women had been invited to do, I think it was like a three minute input on something that they were passionate about. And this one lady had decided to...
My friend, Catherine. I used to teach Catherine.
Right, here we go. Your mate Catherine had decided to do... her input on mindfulness. And now this is the joke because I'm so into mindfulness now, but at this point, 2016 Women Ed conference, I'd never bloody heard of it. And so if you picture, you've got this lecture theatre full of women, this one woman at the at the front explaining the importance and the relevance of mindfulness. And then she invited the whole audience to do some mindfulness with her. And of course, I hadn't done this before. And you've got like that deadly silence in the room. You need to ground your feet. You need to let your shoulders drop. And it was one of those moments. And I got the fit of giggles. And I literally felt it bubbling up inside because I thought, what on earth is this? Like, I've never heard of it. And it was one of those moments where you just have to really keep it in. And I felt like I was gagging, you know, on myself because it was just so... I thought, God, everybody here sat there and believing in this. And it's the joke now is that I'm really, really into it. But that's why I remember that conference, because of that awkward moment where I nearly burst into a fit of giggles in front of hundreds of silent women.
And the irony being that we then ended up working together in a school and introduced mindfulness.
Yeah, exactly. Mindfulness was such a huge part of our curriculum as well, wasn't it? Yeah, I know. And so, yeah, that's where we kind of continued on that journey, didn't we? So I remember getting this advert from you, and it was a really serendipitous time for me because I was having a tough time in the school that I was in. And the advert said, be a flamingo in a flock of pigeons.
I can't remember putting that.
I can remember this because I thought, yes, this is me. And then when we realized where it was, I was like, oh, this is a massive commute. This is such an opportunity, but it's so far to go. I think I responded with something like, yeah, if you send me a helicopter, I'll come and work with you.
We did the job and you did the commute.
We had a lot of fun that year.
We did. So you introduced yourself as being a values-led human being. Tell us a little bit about your core values, and maybe tell the listeners about your family values, because I like what you do with your children, and how those values shape you as a leader.
Okay, yeah, you know about my family values, don't you? Because I know my daughter has shared her affirmations with you from time to time. So we do, and we've had this in place, gosh, really since the kids were little. And I think it was rooted in being a values-based education school, actually, when I really started focusing on what values were, what they were for me, and then what I wanted our values for our family to be. And so we say as a family, I am strong, I am kind, and I am resilient. And we still hold on to that now. So, you know, when you're having those difficult times in your relationships with your family, we still ground ourselves in those. But, you know, those are still part of my core values as well. I still really believe in strength, like mental strength and physical strength. And, you know, that I do a lot on my physical and mental health, like to keep me feeling well. The resilience, of course, is a massive part of who I am and what I do right now, being a resilient leaders coach. The kindness, like that's just such an important one for our family and for children to grow up knowing and really genuinely believing that they need to be kind to others. That's like, it's served us really well as a family. But I think over the last few years, my core values have changed, maybe evolved and developed. I mean, values kind of stick around for me, but they change from situation to situation. But my core values are love, authenticity, integrity, and freedom.
And I know we've talked a lot about freedom. It's an interesting one. We might come back to the freedom one as the conversation continues. So tell us about resilience. How have you gone about developing your resilience as a leader, and how has your resilience been tested along the leadership journey?
Okay, this is a really good question, because in all honesty, I've had such a tumultuous time in leadership. So, you know, I introduced myself, I explained I'm a former head teacher. And so I started as a teacher, senior leader, assistant head teacher, deputy head teacher, co-deputy head teacher, and then, yes, finally, co-head teacher, which I think on the surface looks like a fairly straightforward trajectory, but the reality is quite different. I experienced so many tough times during those leadership years. I experienced a lot of isolation. There were points where I honestly felt like I was really broken. And it wasn't until many years later that I was able to reflect and do the healing. You know, I think it the bottom line was that my values were so disconnected from the places that I found myself working in. And, you know, when there's that disconnect, you always feel like you're battling, don't you? And when you're always battling, like you're losing your energy and you're feeling drained and you're feeling isolated. And, you know, there were some really difficult times and relationships with people were really fraught. But these experiences, like as tough as they were then, have been the most incredible learning curves for me to bring me where I am now. I would say that towards the end of my teaching, my career as a teacher and a head teacher, I almost got to the point where I was broken. And I had to really come back from that and do a lot of healing and a lot of growing. So my resilience has really been tested. My understanding of what resilience is has really been challenged, because I used to look to people around me and think that they were resilient because they would just keep on going. But resilience is just so much more, and it involves such a deep personal awareness. And that's something I've been able to work on since finding myself in this position where I was being broken, but broken for a purpose, broken so that I could move forward, rediscover myself, heal and grow. Yes, there we go.
Well, and pass that learning on, because ultimately the empathy and compassion that you have for the colleagues you support, for the network, there's a whole learning piece there as well, isn't there? So, I mean, we've talked a lot before about visibility as women leaders, and how we aren't always the best at accepting praise and celebrating the things we've achieved. Can you share with us what are some of your proudest moments in your career? And how did you go about celebrating them?
But probably with you, with a lot of porn star martinis.
I thought you were going to say, I got a tattoo. I thought that was going to be your answer.
Yes, well, you know, I could talk about this as well. Let me talk about... Okay, so there are some fairly introverted ways that I will be sort of proud and celebrate the things that I'm proud of. And yeah, there's some fairly outgoing ways that I celebrate my achievements. But actually, so much of what I do, I don't feel like I need that external validation for. So a lot of what happens in my life, and whether that's to do with my coaching career or within my leadership role or as a friend or as a mother, like I quietly am proud of those things. So I think there's a lot in my life to do with acceptance and accepting that things are going well. And that is often just enough. Like the intentional recognition that I'm doing really well and that I've made an incredible career out of what has been quite, as I said, like a tumultuous time. Like that internal recognition is celebration enough for me. I'm really good at saving positive feedback, because I swear for the entire time I worked in leadership roles and as a teacher, I probably heard it but never took it in. You know, and I think you have to really know your self-worth in the role that you're in. And it took me a long time after coming out of headship to realize what my worth was in my new role as a coach, as a facilitator. And I'm really good now at saving all the positive stuff. So I'll take screenshots of emails that I get and any testimonials or positive feedback. And it's just so nice because there's loads. Now, I wouldn't have noticed that in working in education because of the operational firefighting and all the stuff that you're always dealing with. You don't take in the positive. So I make it my intention to soak that stuff up. So that's my kind of quiet celebration, just keeping notes of those things. But yeah, you mentioned the tattoos, and I'd almost forgotten about that actually, because so I have several tattoos, and I tend to use them as sort of a spiritual time that to mark a change of direction or to celebrate something that's going well. I mean, I'm not covered in them, so I haven't had loads and loads to celebrate. And gosh, if I did get a tattoo every time I celebrated something, I really would be covered because there's so much. But let's talk about the two recent ones. So it must have been coming out of my headship. So we're talking September 2020. I had two tattoos on my body, two butterflies, one which is covered in flowers, which signifies growth and thriving. and the other one, which is a tiger's eye, which signifies the courage to keep moving forwards. So those are probably my two favourite ones. And yeah, that's my most outrageous way of celebrating the positive.
Love it. I think you're the only guest who have shared that. So I'm glad you let me push you to share that, because I think that storytelling, like whether it's an artifact or a piece of artwork, but to have it on your body, like there's something quite beautiful there about the story that your body is telling about the milestones you've been through as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a really precious thing.
So that bridges into this idea of our identity as leaders, and how much of your personal self do you weave into your professional self? And you talked about authenticity being a core value. How have you gone about nurturing that sense of you as an authentic leader?
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely show up with my raw, authentic self to whatever it is that I do. And I don't want that to imply that I'm always showing up with heaps of energy. Because often I'm not. Like, I'm a very introverted, peaceful, like very well balanced woman. But I do show up with the essence of me in everything that I do. So I do believe in connection. I do believe in vulnerability. Where it's appropriate, I share my stories, and I share the things that I need to celebrate. I share the things I do well. I share the things that have gone wrong. For me, being authentic means not hiding my identity, but owning it in all its kind of raw authenticity. And whether that is palatable to people, then that's up to them. But, you know, we're here to show it. We're not here to be hidden. We're here to show up in all of our glory. And I try and do that, even when it seems to be gentle or whether it seems to be louder. I try and bring my voice, and I find that hard to do sometimes as somebody who's quiet and introverted. But, you know, I know what I want to say. I know inside in my heart what I want to say. And I'm lucky now because I have a platform or a job where I can share that voice and inspire others, hopefully through doing that.
And going back to your value of freedom, I've definitely observed in you that you've got the freedom to be authentic because you're not bound by the system anymore, the structures of an institution.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I struggled with in my leadership roles, because I genuinely and truly believe in freedom and being your full self and being able to bring that to whatever role that you do. But when you work in a system that expects something differently of you, there's a real disconnect there with your identity and with your values. And that's really, really destructive. You know, I was a tattooed head teacher with undercut and short hair. People made assumptions about my sexuality, about my leadership style, about my professionalism. You know, you have to work extra hard then to show people that, yes, I'm just the same as the Bowden-wearing head teacher who works at the LA down the road, if not better, you know. So, yeah, I do bring myself to the table in whatever I do. And in terms of nurturing my authenticity, I do a lot of work on self-discovery. So I do journaling, as you know. I write a lot of stuff down. I believe in getting stuff out of my head and onto paper and sharing it with those people that I can trust to do so. I do a lot of work on meditation, which I don't find easy whatsoever, because my mind's always got stuff to think about. But, you know, it's just that self-discipline and being able to reflect what went well, what could I have done better, why did that work well? If that worked well, like, how can I carve out more time to do stuff like that for myself? So, you know, lots of work on oneself.
Yeah, absolutely. That self-discovery, that self-exploration, that awareness of self is so important. So tell us about empowerment. Who has empowered you in your life, in your career, and how have you then passed that empowerment on to others?
Wow. I actually find this one a really difficult one to answer, because I don't think I've ever sat down and taken stock on the women or the people around me that have really, really empowered me. Because I think at the time when I've been empowered, I've been so operationally flooded with other things that are going on, and I haven't been able to reflect and celebrate. So I'm finding this one of the most challenging questions, because sometimes I look to people and I'm just quietly inspired by them. and it's not a big deal. But I think you've said something there that really resonates with me. I haven't taken the time really to write it down or reflect on it, but you know, there's those moments, right? I don't feel like I've had any big moment where somebody stood up and shared something and I've gone, oh my goodness, I want to be you. You've opened this door for me. You know, there's been lots of quiet moments where I know that's happened. And I think that happens for everyone. I wish I had taken stock more on what was happening, but you know, it's been a busy time. So there's plenty of people like Hannah, you know, you've always been my champion. And even now when I coach and we talk about who is your coach, who is your mentor, who is your therapist, who is your champion. And I always say, I'm so lucky because my mentor and champion are the same woman. So you know that you've opened doors for me, you know, as a friend and as a professional. And I've taken stock of that one for sure.
Oh, thank you, babe. And how have you passed it on? Like, I know you empower your girls. I know you empower the people you work with. Any reflections on that?
Well, you know, I hope that I do empower them, and in the perhaps the small nuggets and golden moments and things that I share in the facilitation, in the coaching meetings that I hold, in the peer support that I hold. I think just in sharing your wisdom and your experiences, people are giving themselves that permission to step up, step forward, to open a door for themselves, for their mothers. And, you know, I don't ever intend to do that, but I know that in sharing my experiences, that is happening. And that's happening. Yeah. And then I know because I get that feedback.
Absolutely. Like, I've seen you empower people who have come out of difficult headships and have come to the network, and you've supported them on their journeys, and they're now part of the people who are contributing to that space. So there's a whole legacy piece there, isn't there? A domino effect that's going on as well.
Yeah, and that only happens when you bring your true self to the table, doesn't it? Nobody wants to constantly hear of success stories and how easy it is to step out of headship and into something different. Actually, it's really tough, and there's a lot of work that you have to do on yourself. And I think in sharing that, it just gives people the permission to step forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about bits of advice, feedback, wisdom that you've picked up and gleaned along the way, and how they've helped you as a leader, how they've impacted you. Any tidbits you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, okay. So something that was really helpful to me was when I was a senior leader, I worked with a head teacher who used to collect quotes, and she used to write them down in a journal, and she would always find cards with these fancy quotes on and put post-its in my pigeonhole. And I always found these really kind of curious but inspirational. And at that time, the one that she left with me was the Winston Churchill one, which says, "Success is not final, failure is not fatal, it is the courage to continue that counts." And that stuck with me, and I've still got it now in my bedroom. And it's not one that I go to all the time, but it's that bit around continuing and courage. That's the bits that I've held on to. So just having the courage to quietly step forward, having the courage to heal from a traumatic experience, having the courage to share your experience and reach out to people. Like, it's that constant being able to move forward and learn and not keep looking back, but learning from what's happened and using that to just forge forwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just talking to somebody else on an earlier episode about the power of the RLE framework and some of the tools in the framework and the affirmation and the leadership mantra, and how that really helps us find that clarity. Like, what are some of your leadership mantras and affirmations that have helped you on your journey?
Okay, so I live in a world of quotes. So I am always journaling and turning to quotes. I take screenshots of them. I've got them on my phone. I flick through them. I post them. But like, this is my leadership mantra, and I love it because it sounds so super sexy.
Go on.
It is. "I don't chase, I attract." And it just, yes, it does sound sexy, doesn't it? Did I make it sound sexy when I said
it? Yeah. But I can see how that works professionally as well as personally.
Yeah. And so for me, it's actually, funnily enough, not rooted in a really sexy place. It's actually rooted in a really spiritual place, because it's such a grounding thing. And this is rooted in the fact that the universe has intentions for us. Okay, you don't need to expend your energy on things that don't matter. You don't need to chase. What is meant to be will come to you, but you have to be open to it. You've got to open your heart to it. You've got to open your mind to it. And often you've really got to let go of things in order to let the good stuff come in. So that's what I mean by not chasing and attractive. It's grounded in the universe.
Yeah, that abundance mindset and that, the belief that the universe will manifest what it is you need.
Things happen at the right time for the right reason, and that is what you have to hold on to. Like when things are really tough at work or in relationships, that's what I go back to. This is meant to happen. It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel good. I'm really struggling, but actually this is meant to be. I will learn from this. I'll grow from this. I'll move forward from this.
I love that. So thinking about people who embody these values that you've talked about already, like who are the role models in your life, and this could be personal, professional, or just public life, who really encapsulate this idea of being a resilient, empowered, authentic leader? And what is it about their leadership style behaviours that you would like to emulate?
I think what I've learned in particularly the last 18 months is I don't need to look up for role models. I was constantly doing that. You know, I like reading books and biographies and all sorts. And of course, I love the strong women in my life, but I've learned to look across and just listening to the stories from the head teachers that I work with and from the women that I surround myself with. Like their stories and their narratives are the things that inspire me the most. Like these women who have absolutely no platform whatsoever are the role models that we need to look forward to. Like they are the ones that have the inspirational moments, and they're leading, even if they're not leading in a leadership role, the way that they are leading and owning their life is inspirational. You know, I've got friends, my best friend's husband died in October. She is 36 and she's raising two children on her own and renovating a house. It's bloody inspirational. There's no platform for that woman. Another friend, you know, that was left after an emotionally abusive relationship. She's raising two little ones now. You know, she's had the worst time of it with no support around her. No platform for her, but just that incredible amount of strength and resilience and ability to reflect and stay bloody positive. Like it's an inspiration that these women can get out of bed and smile every day, like let alone raise children. Like that's the toughest job in the world, right?
Tell me about thought leaders. Like who are the people who you listen to, who you read, who you watch, perhaps in a wider sense, and how has their teaching, their sharing helped shape your thinking as a leader?
Sure. Well, I know this sounds really outdated and sad, but I've only just got into podcasts. So I've never really listened to podcasts. I've listened to fiction and I've listened to leadership stories. And, you know, I've just changed my course of direction somewhat. So I've started listening to stuff that's a little bit more spiritual. And I don't know whether you've heard of Jay Shetty. He's British guy who wrote How to Think Like a Monk. His podcasts are awesome. Like, you'd love them. So I think so many of your listeners love them, actually, because of the themes that they cover. They're real. They're to do with values. They're to do with self-compassion and, you know, imposter syndrome. They're to do with love and healing. And I just love his perspective. And I love that he draws on his time as a monk. And I think I really buy into people who know themselves, and like this guy knows himself really well, and he has these really interesting guests, so really well-known guests as well, but sometimes he'll just do a solo podcast and talk about some of his reflections. But the stuff that he's talking about there really resonates with me, and I think that's the kind of stuff I'm really enjoying listening to at the moment. So I feel like I'm moving away slightly from the educational system and just working on more self-discovery stuff. I find it fascinating.
I was just googling it. I'm right, he did say he was Ruby back, didn't he?
Most likely. Oh, we like Ruby, don't we? Can you remember our time with Ruby? I think we accused her of having some kind of spiritual animal.
Squirrel. She asked us all what our spiritual animal was, and we decided ours was a squirrel. So yeah, have a look at that one, because I'm sure that's how I knew his name, because she mentioned him, and they've done a piece together or a piece of work together.
I will definitely check that out, but his podcasts are awesome and they're such easily listening, so I can do that with my earphones in on an audiobook or whatever, hands-free.
I love that, and that's really bringing your personal self and that mindfulness, that meditation, to that professional leadership as well, and like building that bridge.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely a values connection there.
Awesome. So final question, what are your key takeaways for the listeners about what it means to be real, what it means to be a resilient, empowered, authentic leader?
Okay. So, you know, the biggest thing I can share with your listeners, Han, is do the work on yourself. Like, do the time, carve the time out, work on yourself. It's all about self-awareness. Like, do the work to discover your soul purpose. Do the work to discover what your values are. Do the work to reflect on what's working for you. Do the work to reflect on what's holding you back. Just put the time and energy into yourself, because you genuinely can't serve others. You can't lead. You can't lead in a professional capacity. You can't lead in your own personal life when you don't thoroughly know yourself. And that's not easy. It's not easy, firstly, to carve out the time, but it's not easy to do that work because it's difficult, and you've got to challenge yourself and challenge your self-limiting beliefs and look at your barriers and look at what's stopping you. And it's, you know, some shadow work there, and it's really hard. But actually, when you know yourself fully, like, you can live a more fulfilled life, you can serve others. You've got to nurture yourself.
I love that, Kate. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I'm looking forward to sharing this conversation with the listeners.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Real Woman Podcast. Check out the show notes for the recommendations from today's guest. We would love to hear what you think, so do leave us a review. We'll be back soon with another real guest.